Good morning, folks. Bill's back. Got him on camera. We'll start. We'll give it like another 2 minutes. We'll wait till like 10:32 and then we'll get started. Thank you all for logging in. I hope you're all staying healthy, safe. Bill and I are lucky. We're in Southern California where things seem to be not as bad. They might be worse up in LA. Friends and family in New York in particular, I know, are going through some crazy stuff. So we appreciate you taking the time to learn something new while we're adjusting to our new way of life. So we'll start in a couple of minutes. Cindy says you look good, Bill. In case you were worried.
Checks in the mail, Cindy.
People, yeah. I have a variety of beverages. I got tea. A couple times people would be joking like, "Hey, what do you have in what do you got in your teacup there?"
I did a thing last night. I was just putting together some of the industry guys that I've worked with over the years, because mm-hmm. We would all be in NAB right now, right?
Right.
Starting like tomorrow. My plan was to go out there tomorrow.
Yeah, we would have been traveling today and starting setting up. Yeah, because NAB was pushed up because it was going to start on Sunday, right? So right. Yeah, we would have loaded the truck this morning. We'd be on our way right now.
Right. So I thought, it'd be fun to kind of, the guys that I've worked with over the years at various places. We all got on a call, which was a lot of fun. I call it the happy hour. My wife, now that she's been working from home, has been doing like nearly nightly happy hours along with all the rest of the stuff she does. And watch her come downstairs and she'll grab a bottle of wine and go back upstairs and go, "Hey, what are you doing?" And it's like, she constantly, I'm like, "Wow, I'm thinking you're drinking more in this whole coronavirus thing than you did before."
The alcohol helps kill the bacteria. We don't just put it on our hands. You got to drink it.
Internally and externally.
I did a fun call. We're going to do it every Friday, Friday evening with one whole group of cousins. And I've been coming to the office. We got to keep things going, critical infrastructure. But all my cousins are, one had, like a stout, a microbrew. And I'm like, "Hey, I'm at the office. I can't have any drinks. I don't. This is not Mad Men. I don't, you see here on the credenza, I don't have a bar on the credenza,
Well, I'm maybe you're doing it wrong, Jim.
Yeah, maybe. All right, so it looks like we got a good number of people logged in. So let's get started. I'm recording. So good morning, everyone, or good afternoon, depending upon where you are. Jim Giacchetti here. I'm the CTO of Vitovation. And I'm with a good buddy of mine, Bill Apker from TAG Video Systems. Let me give control over to Bill.
Morning, everybody. I'm Bill Apker, Vice President of Sales and for LATAM and North America. Glad to be here today.
Yeah, you should have control, Bill. Let me see if you want to grab the screen.
Sure.
Here, make presenter. Here you go. There you go.
All right.
You should have control now.
Great. I guess I could tell you a little bit about what we do at TAG. So TAG is the world's number one probing, monitoring, and multi-viewer software solution. 100% hot software, 100% IP, and 100% COTS. We manage both compressed and uncompressed in the same solution. And we really focus over the last year on four specific broadcast and media applications. So live production, working with 2110 and J2K, playout and master control, which has a variety of flavors inside of that. traditional delivery with H.264 and PigTS, and then of course OTT with you know, a multitude of formats, including the ABR stack. It's we do about 330 different probing capabilities inside the software. So anything from closed captioning to PTP, audio video loss, SCUDI 35. There's a lot that we monitor and probe inside of there. We also support everything up to 12G uncompressed 4K on outputs and inputs. What that really means is that, you know, you get more real estate for what you're paying for. We've seen, you know, 100 pips on a nice good size monitor look very, very good. In fact, you can see detail all the way down to, you know, lower thirds and things like that very easily. We have a completely open architecture as far as APIs are concerned. And at least today, and we should change this slide because it's we're now monitoring or managing about 50,000 channels globally.
So Bill, you know, I was introduced to your company about a year ago as a monitoring or a multi-viewer company, you know, IP-based multi-viewer, but your real roots are in this probing and the diagnostics. So you know, you're doing much more than multi-viewing. You know, multi-viewing kind of came along as a secondary function. Is that a correct statement or?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, if you look at what our probing capabilities are, they actually are extensive. And when you're looking at an ecosystem, what we used to do, you know, talk about the SDI world where you had from the beginning to the end of the chain was all internal to a TV station, right? So the production of the show, through master control, through the transmitter, that was all controlled by a television station. In the IP world, that is completely changed because the only real piece that anybody has internally is, you know, the processing, basically. I mean, if you're still doing, you know, local production and smaller TV stations, that makes sense. But in larger organizations, we see a lot of, you know, the source material coming in from somewhere, whether it be AWS, whether it be another facility, wherever it happens to be, comes into a main hub, and that hub processes it and adds the stuff it needs to add, and then pushes it out to numerous distribution networks, you know, whether it be Hulu, whether it be Disney Plus, whether it be the upcoming Peacock, you know, whatever it happens to be. If it's live, you're doing it in multiple pieces. And then, of course, it's living, or it's being distributed again out through the CDNs, and those CDNs are delivering it to your set-top box in some way.
So you were telling me this earlier, you can probe at any point in the chain. Some of our customers, and we can elaborate on this more, but some of our customers, I see your technology being used by transmission engineers. Some of you guys may have heard us talk about this before we actually got started, where we work with a company by the name of Avi West, where, you know, bonded cellular, doing at-home production, bringing IP feeds into the master control. I could see tag being used at the video engineer's workstation. Now, as workflows are changing, people are working from home, that IP multi-viewer, that IP diagnostic workstation could be accessed from home as long as the video engineer, the transmission engineer has an internet connection. They can monitor the entire system from anywhere. And then, like you say, Bill, your probes, that's just one probe point, the signals coming in, but then you can monitor the signals in the facility, going to each edit suite, going to your OTT provider, your CDN. You can probe at any of these points?
Absolutely. And this is a great example of what we're talking about here. So, you know, you have this is very generic, but we actually produce this slide from one of our customers' conversations. And what they needed to do is bring in, you know, content from these different places, either a live venue or a broadcast or in multiple ways. So this could be coming from an IP source somewhere else. It could be coming from the cloud. It doesn't matter to us. As long as it's IP, it comes into the head end. And then at each one of these cogs is kind of where we see that, you know, there's a possibility of probing. So these are typically IP addresses across the entire system, but we're able to put a probe here and a probe here and a probe here and a probe in the output here and actually monitor the entire ABR stack, actually monitor that entire ABR stack once it returns from the CDN. But it doesn't matter to us because we can, you know, we take everything from a few kilobits all the way up to 12 gig uncompressed in the same system. So whether it is a MPEG TS 50 here and an MPEG TS 25 here, and then some version of that in an ABR stack, at whatever bit rate it is or whatever resolution it is, we'll monitor it there, and then we'll decrypt it and then bring it back in so you can actually see it. So imagine this is, you know, the broadcaster is this entire, you know, chain. They want to see it as they traditionally always have been able to see it throughout the entire process of making pictures on the output and sending it to a home.
We had a I forget how to turn on the little pointer here. Well, anyway, so you see here where you have like go back to that slide you just had up, Bill, or go forward one. So we had an issue where video was leaving the AVIWEST Stream Hub in the cloud just fine. We weren't dropping any packets. The audio was fine. We could probe. We can look at the diagnostics within the AVIWEST instance, but we didn't have this probe that you have here at CDN1 and CDN2. The CDN was claiming we're getting the feed with garbled audio. So, you know, back and forth. It ended up that the CDN was having a problem, but there was no way for us to prove that point. So we could have, if we implemented tag video systems IP technology, we could probe within the CDN number one or CDN number two to figure out where the garbled audio was coming from. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And in fact, one of our recent customers that we actually built this slide around is monitoring at several points from the packager, you know, several renditions of the packager, and they're monitoring one rendition at four different CDNs. And they're bringing that all back into their facility so they can actually see it and then, you know, be able to report on it. So again, we're monitoring at multiple points so that in the end, we can go back and go, well, listen, you know, Akamai is doing just fine. Why isn't, you know, CenturyLink working as well?
Right,
not to
right.
throw anybody under the bus, but
this is an example, of course. Yeah.
But yeah, we're monitoring it at numerous places, and that, you know, obviously eases the mind of the broadcaster when he can sit there and go, I know it's clean going out of my facility. I know it's clean at multiple CDN points. It's not clean you. It's got to be you. You know, it's a very easy way to start pointing fingers.
Well, And then the transmission engineers in master control see the problem before customers start calling and complaining. You know, minutes, hours could go by before a customer complains. You know, this is advertising revenue. You were even telling me your probing can help predict problems. Maybe can you tell us more about that? How that works? That's intriguing to me. That knowing a problem's about to happen at some point in the future.
So because we have a completely open API architecture, and we work closely with a lot of NMS vendors, you know, whether it be, you know, Dataminr, MNC, that's where really the power starts coming in, because it's not us that's able to predict those failures, but it's actually, because we work so closely with, you know, the NMS folks, that they're actually able to design algorithms around or AI around what we're doing to be able to predict failures in the entire channel chain. It's a really great pairing of the two, and really takes the software approach to the next level. That's really where the power comes in. I mean, we're a probing, monitoring, and multiviewer company, so our focus is video. Their focus is capturing alarms and then doing something with them. And that's where we have a great relationship with a lot of them.
Cool. Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah. So we give lots of support. I can show you if we go to this slide. That's not the one I want to show you. Where's my other slide? Far too many PowerPoint presentations up right now.
Well, I'll do some puppets, some shadow puppets while you find the slide.
Yeah. It's here somewhere. What did they just do with that?
Well, so how, we were talking about this before while you're finding the slide, you know. So while we've done a lot of work with Turner Sports for the Ryder Cup. We've done some soccer championships with them where, you know, whole at-home production. I think you and I were talking before the call that, you know, we have at-home production where you're producing at your home studio or at your home master control, but now we have talent working from home. Talent operators working from home. So Vidovation, we've been a champion of at home technology for quite some time. Some of the challenges from a transmission standpoint that we've solved is, you know, maintaining gen lock, maintaining perfect lip sync. Those are some of the infrastructure challenges we've overcome. In the scenario like our live PD TV show, you know, they want to remove bodies from the control room. They want the transmission engineer, the video engineer to work at home. Mm-hmm. So they got 48 ISO camera feeds coming into master control. They dump it into an EVS system. How could tag help if we put probes on the IP streams coming into the master control? How can you help? How can you help monitor that in the studio, or if an operator is working at home, how do they get that those diagnostics at home?
So it's interesting you mention that, because it's a twofold process when you start looking at that. Remote production has been, you know, talked about for what, 5 or 6 years now, moving people around and having less walls in between everybody and less centralized people. You know, having people in the field bringing back content to a central location is relatively straightforward. It's what you guys do at Live PD all the time. So that's one aspect of it. And in that aspect, it's very easy for us to gather that content, whether it is in AWS, whether you're bringing those IP signals back in-house and then turning them onto, you know, glass so you can view them internally is one side. The in-home production that we're all facing right now is a totally different perspective. We do it very well because, again, if those signals are all coming into a somewhat central location, because I think they still have to, most people are not doing at-home production where they're bringing those signals back into their house. They're still bringing them into some central location. Well, the great thing is that because of what we do, we're all IP in and out. You know, we can produce mosaics for numerous different end users, if you will. So if a producer needs to see, you know, all these feeds coming in from different locations on their monitor, they can do that. But we can also produce a piece of that to go to a video wall that you would normally have inside of a control room. But even if that control room guy wasn't sitting in a facility and he was sitting on his couch in his front room, you know, we can also produce outputs to him as well. Again, it's all IP based. Our mosaics output is, you know, we can either do MPEG TS and uncompressed in studio, which is what normal people want to see, is an uncompressed on the screen. But that uncompressed signal actually has a copy. Every one of our outputs has a copy in HLS. So that HLS copy can actually go to them at their house. And they can see exactly what you would see sitting in a control room at home.
I have actually a very good question from Rajneesh. This is actually a great question. You know, what if I don't have my feeds already in IP? Now, I know Fox, you guys work with QVC. There's many facilities now. ESPN, a lot of facilities are migrating, if not already, in all IP-based master control. But what this gentleman is asking is, you know, how do I convert HDMI, SDI to IP? Do I need a bunch of encoders? And I guess the answer is yes. You know, that if this technology makes sense if somebody is migrating to an IP workflow, they'd have to have a IP master control routing switcher. Maybe speak to that, you know. Sure. Who is this technology ideally suited for, and is it for everyone? If somebody is primarily an SDI workflow, Live PD, as of a few weeks ago, was an all SDI workflow. Now they're scrambling to convert things to IP to have people working remote. So maybe speak to that. When is this appropriate? When does it work? When doesn't it work? Maybe it's not for everyone.
Yeah, and that really comes down to the fact that, you know, we acknowledge that we may be a little bit ahead of the curve. IP is still, in a lot of cases, people think that it's untested technology. We've been working with it for so long now, 12 years that we've been working in the IP side of things. But when you're talking production, specifically 2110 or 2022, you know, people are adopting that as new facilities come on board or as they see the need for it. I see a lot more larger broadcasters really moving to it quickly because they can get signals from anywhere to anywhere very easily, and more of them are pushing toward, you know, cloud-based applications, which we work in very well. And so if you're a TV station that has a bunch of SDI, you really have to weigh the pros and cons of adding exactly what you're talking about, Jim, converters or gateways to be able to take an SDI signal into IP. But once you're in IP, I think that's where the power really comes in, because now you're using the full ability of the tag solution and being able to deliver a multiviewer or probes from anywhere. It doesn't matter where it's from. And that mm-hmm. releases you from borders and walls and all this other great stuff that, you know, removing IP or removing SDI out of the equation really lends itself well to.
Well, I think also there's a lot more IP out there than people imagine, that if you are a user of just simply bonded cellular technology, that is an IP-based transport. The boxes you're using now, the receiver box, is probably spitting out SDI. If you're using AVIWEST, Vidovation's partner, it's very easy to get licenses to spit out IP. I'm sure other vendors are doing that as well, having IP outputs. So even if it's just little islands of IP, right? If you're not 100% all IP, tag. I'm looking at bundling the tag technology with the AVIWEST technology as a diagnostic tool. Here's a common problem that we see, that the bonded cellular mounts on the camera. It goes between the battery and the camera. So it's on the camera. When the operator has to do a battery change, the operator will forget to turn the AVIWEST unit back on. The newer AVIWEST unit now has an auto transmit. When you reapply power, it'll boot up automatically and start transmitting automatically. But if you have an older unit, or if the operator turns it off accidentally, but a common problem will be, you know, camera 37, okay, it's down, they hear on the comms, or camera 37 says, okay, I'm gonna go change my battery on the comms. Go change it. 3 minutes later, the camera's not back up. What's going on? Oh, sorry, boss, I forgot to turn my camera on. So one of the features that I like about your multi-viewer is you have that penalty box, that if a camera feed has something wrong with it, or if it's not there, That feed is moved to this area. So a video engineer or some technical person, some transmission engineer could just be watching that penalty box. And then I guess, Bill, could we set a timer that if a feed stays in the penalty box more than 2 minutes, make something flash that, you know, somebody needs to alert camera 37 that he didn't turn the camera back on, or are you having problems getting another battery 37? What's up? Why are you not back on the air? So how would you help with that workflow problem?
Yeah, so it's interesting because I've been in the multi-viewer side of things for quite a few years, and we've always had the big video walls with lots of pictures on it. Well, and especially when you're getting into very large installations, penalty boxes really add a sense of urgency because it's the one thing that flashes at people. And it makes a perfect, you can set thresholds in our software for a certain time. So let's say if it's black for 30 seconds, don't do anything. But if it's black for over 30 seconds, you know, start throwing stuff into what we call essential air display or penalty box view. And it really helps focus operators' eyes over to that piece. This is, for us, it's not a new technology. In fact, we've been doing it for many, many years. But it just gives that focus from the operator and takes his eyes from the big screen of pictures and moves it to something that's more important in that moment. So yes, the central air display or penalty box views are crucial in any operation, in my opinion, because there's just too many things going on overall.
Well, another problem I could see too is that these at home productions, live sports, live reality TV. Early on, the live PD folks were very clever. They were like, what is live reality TV very much like? It's like live sports. So they actually use EVS. They have quite a few EVS operators. So they dump all the live video into an EVS instant replay system. And if there's a problem with the camera, somebody unplugs some microphones, battery died on a lav wireless mic, they may not see it for a few minutes or until it's too late. It's dumped. So now they don't have audio on that video clip they want to use. So our systems support four channels of audio. So we could say, you know, camera 37 has two audios, camera 38 has four audios. Knowing how many audios are supposed to be there, we could have alarms if certain audio is missing, correct?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
I could see that as a, you know, hey, 37, what happened? Did you not plug the lav in? Or can you please check the lav on the talent or on the officer? Is that stuff you could probe and look at?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we have so many thresholds that we can set inside of it. I don't know if you guys can see this picture.
Yeah, that's...
But I can give you a little bit of a preview of kind of what, you know, we would see inside of the software itself. It gives you a little bit of an idea as soon as it walks in. So we have many thresholds. I mean, you can kind of see all the points that we cover
can
in here.
You, audio. Can you audio, zoom in maybe a little bit? Let me, if I go full screen, I can kind of read it. It's not bad.
Can I make it bigger?
I think you like zoom your browser, you know, hit the three little dots there on the sure. side. I think yeah, that's not bad. Yeah.
So we have many thresholds in here about audio and video loss, and we can set them to anything you really want. The great thing is the notifications can be set as well. So if you have a specific, you know, especially audio is, you know, sometimes can be critical depending on what channels you want to listen to. You know, mostly the stereo mix is probably channels 1 and 2. And you want those to be red, but you could also set channels 3 and 4 to be yellow if something failed in there, or green or blue or pretty much any color you really want. It kind of come down to that. And of course that will alarm and if it is set as something critical or the threshold that you determine it needs to be, again, that would throw it up in the penalty box view or central air display view as well.
Well, see, in the case of live PD too, they we so one of these audio problems might not be catched during rehearsal. You know, they do a rehearsal an hour or 90 minutes before they go live. And, you know, all of this could be pre-programmed, right? So I keep coming back to this camera, this fictitious camera number 37. But
yeah,
so camera 37 comes up during rehearsal, and three of the four audio channels that are supposed to be there are missing. And, during rehearsal is the time to sort this out. Not while you're on the live show. You know, and again, it comes to that predictive prediction. If an IP stream is starting to have problems or it's falling apart, or if you're, I mean, our tools will show you packet loss. AVIWEST has ARQ, forward error correction. They use this Safe Streams transport. But if, I don't know, God forbid something was dropping frames, you know, usually if something is misbehaving, rebooting an encoder usually solves the problem. So if something was stuttering, we were dropping frames, audio was garbled, you could set alarms for that as well. And then, you know, Absolutely. Back to this camera 37, if 37 was dropping frames, the director could say, you know, okay, you know, 37, when you're clear, you know, do a quick reboot, you know. You could probe those kinds of things.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, with 350 events that we monitor in any IP address, it's pretty extensive, including timing, including drop frames. You know, we will look at that and be able to see what's going on.
Okay.
And alert the engineer in the end to, you know, maybe making a change.
Okay. So I don't know if this is a good point to mention this. So you guys kind of, you've always had this philosophy, but you put a name to it. You know, this zero friction thing, you know, not all companies operate the same, you know. I'll give you some examples with some other vendors. Like, for example, AVIWEST, compared to some of their competitors, you buy a license, you own the license forever. You don't get hit with renewing the license every year. Some vendors do that. That's kind of an unethical revenue stream where they're charging you every year for the licenses. So maybe speak to that, your zero friction philosophy. What's that all about? I think you have a slide deck about that, right?
Yeah, I have a little bit of a piece on it. So, you know, about 9 months ago now, we took a look at the business and we started looking at what Tomer and Gal really had meant when they started the business. You know, there were two guys that started a tag. And realized that IP video was going to be the future. And in the beginning, they were very, very set that they, because they were two guys and they didn't want problems with the system itself. They didn't have the support backing to do it. Now we have a lot more people in for support these days because things are growing and things like that. But their whole philosophy was the fact that they wanted the ability to have a zero friction approach to television. And that really is translated into what we call zero friction. And the zero friction really is, you know, multifunctional, multi-application being compressed or uncompressed in the same solution, complete operational agility. So I like to always say that it's technology without borders or without walls anymore. So a great example of this is, as we were talking earlier, let's say you had a truck that was got set and is in its fax period, and they're testing out everything. And the producer comes to them and says, "We need to monitor another 40 channels tomorrow." In traditional ways, it's another box, it's another, you know, piece of hardware to be able to do that. But the great thing with tag is once you have your what I like to call tag currency, you can move your licenses from wherever they are in your facility. So you have a truck set in Los Angeles and you know you have a truck on its way to Atlanta that won't be set until Friday. Well, the perfect thing is you can take those licenses from that truck in Atlanta and move them to the truck in LA, use them until Thursday when their shoot is over with, and then move them back to the truck in Atlanta so that he can be ready for your next one, his next shoot. Completely flexible idea, completely flexible for what the operation of that person is or that company is. And it continues to be like that all the time. In fact, we move licenses for clients all the time, even on-prem when they need, you know, they want them from this. In, if it's on-prem, they can move from here to there. It's very easy for us to do that. And it's very easy for them to do that. And a lot of our clients have always been doing that because they have different operational needs. Their setup changes on a relatively regular basis. So it's, you know, it's great to have that flexibility. And what it also gives you is maximum utilization, because a lot of people build for the 100% threshold. You know, they need this much stuff to do a little bit, but that this much stuff does once or twice a year. And so we've heard a lot of times that, you know, you only get about 30% utilization out of your system on any given day when it's not, you know, all hands on deck. So this really takes that from that 30% utilization and makes it 100% utilization, because now you're moving licenses based upon your operational needs.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I see other analogies. So like you said, a truck is not being used, the studio is dark, a control room is dark, you can move the licenses around. Normally, a license is tied to the MAC address of the piece of hardware associated with it. You know, if we're talking about software, and if they're not movable, or you'd have to call to the vendor and unregister the license and then re-register it. So it sounds like your process has a lot less friction, hence the zero friction. One of the things I wrote about recently, I wrote a piece in Broadcast Engineering Extra before NAB, well, before NAB was supposed to happen, the pre-NAB issue. And we talked about at-home production. And it's the same idea that whether it's people, personnel, or a truck, if a truck is doing an afternoon hockey game in LA, that truck probably cannot do any other events, you know, a few days before and a few days afterwards. It can do that one game on Saturday. If a truck is in New York doing an afternoon ball game in New York, that truck cannot be used for an evening ball game in LA. Truck physically can't get there. Mm-hmm. If we do at-home production where there is no truck, or if we still use trucks, there's an idea that NEP would just keep their trucks in a parking lot somewhere in a central location with a good internet connection, or trucks would be parked somewhere regionally near different venues, and a truck can do more than one event a day. Wouldn't that be more beneficial? Then NEP or Game Creek wouldn't need as many trucks.
Absolutely.
Some of the truck manufacturers criticize me. Say, hey, Jim, aren't you the guy with the no truck logo on your website? It's like, well, that's just a marketing thing. I think the truck will change. We'll use smaller trucks. Now take it down to the personnel level. Just like your software licenses, Bill, with the tag software, you have your operators. So your highly skilled employee, your EVS operator, has got to fly to LA to sit in a truck to do the hockey game. Wouldn't it be nice if that EVS operator could stay at home or stay at a centralized master control and do a game in the morning, do a game in the afternoon, do a game in the evening, where they could do 2-3 events in one day instead of 2 or 3 events in one week? To me, the most scary thing, I think, I'm not looking forward to getting in a plane anytime soon. I think that's when, you know, catching a virus, getting sick in that recirculated air in that tin can. So if I could work in a controlled environment where I sleep at home and I go to my regular workplace, where there's cleaning crews keeping everything clean, minimal exposure to other people, or take it a step further, I'm working at home now. So I think this all fits into the same ecosystem, right? I mean, do you want to add to that? That, you know, it's not only the license, it's the truck, it's the assets, it's the software asset, the personnel asset.
It's interesting you bring that up, because it's one thing, and you may recall this from recent years, that I was explaining this to somebody the other day, that it's funny that for broadcast television and television in general and remote production in general, that we still send trucks everywhere and we still send crews everywhere. In the movie professional business, the one thing that I don't know if you know this, that they did numerous years ago, was they realized that colorists are expensive. And those colorists usually, typically, had to go to facility and sit in a big room with a big screen and then do the colors where they were on that area. Well, I had heard a long time ago, and I've worked with a lot of the studios over the year, both in LA and in San Francisco. And one thing they did is, well, we have a colorist in Los Angeles, and we can make that person stay in that seat all day long, and he can color for, you know, a show here in LA or in the Valley or in San Francisco from his one location. So they basically already centralized the talent and brought the work to him so that he could do exactly what you're talking about. I see that we're going to move quickly toward that, or we're moving quickly toward that, because now, and I've been seeing it all over LinkedIn and all over, you know, the places that I monitor, that more and more of those people are moving, you know, audio to their home. They're moving, you know, production studios to their home, or at least production control services to their home. You know, editing is really easy. I mean, I think you can, computers are more powerful enough now that you can do editing from pretty much anywhere. Mm-hmm. But some of those big pieces, it makes a lot of sense. And so as a technical director, which I was one years and years and years ago, you know, the one bad part about it is I could never bring all those signals home. It's very difficult to do that. You know, control service, you can control from remotely across an IP link. You don't need to have those coming into the central control service, because now control service is so flexible. But how do you get the video back? And that's where we really step in, is go, you know, whether you're sitting in front of a piece of glass in a dark room in a television station in front of a production switcher, or you're sitting at home, we can deliver that same type of experience to you, which eases those restrictions. So that technical director that's now sitting there doing, you know, four shows a day in the morning and then four shows at night for the other guy, you know, they could do multiple shows all day long. And if you're centralizing everything, that means they're just pulling feeds from different television stations, and you can see exactly what you would see if you were sitting in the control room at home.
Right, right. Well, what also makes, I mean, you guys help with the diagnostics, the multi-viewing, Vidovation, a big part of what we do is the infrastructure. The bonded cellular technology I mentioned earlier, there's usually about a second latency is kind of like the sweet spot. Theoretically, we can go down to about a half a second, but then you know, you need a more reliable connection. But in the film industry, we've done some projects where, exactly like you're talking about, the director's at his house in Malibu, the colorist is at his facility in Hollywood, but the director wants to watch what the colorist is doing. You know. I guess some directors are micromanagers, some are not, or the director and the director of photography also need to both eavesdrop or give the colorist notes. And we need extremely low latency, but also high fidelity connections. So we partner with another company called VNova, which they have technology that's contrarian to JPEG 2000. So a lot of the common transport for the application you're talking about, Bill, would be like a J2K, a high bit rate transport, lightly compressed. I mean, unless you had fiber optic connections between the director's Malibu house and the colorist facility, doing uncompressed, I don't know, is practical. But these VNova guys, they just got a SMPTE 2117 is the new standard, and it's near the quality of uncompressed, but it's 25 to 75% more efficient than JPEG 2000. So I see VNova integrating their transport with TAG. That's why I think Vidovation partnering with TAG. In case you folks can't tell, Bill's my new best friend now. That I could see bringing TAG and Bill, TAG Video Systems, into many of our projects and integrating it with some of the IP transport we got. But you agree that that low latency, you talk about that a lot too, about latency, low latency applications. Maybe you want to speak to that.
Sure. I mean, we do support JPEG 2000, both in and out, MPEG, you know, transport stream, but those are, you know, definitely compressed formats.
Right.
I think for, you know, when we start talking, one of the big hurdles in uncompressed has always been latency. They want, you know, typical broadcasters or typically production studios want the same experience they would experience with a SDI format. You know, what in multiviewers and SDI format, we were down to, you know, maybe a couple frames, I think, was what we typically were at. I've worked for other multiviewer companies in the past, and you know, we got it down in SDI through SDI video specific hardware to a couple of frames. We've just recently at TAG, you know, number one, through software, increased the capacity of the server. So if you had a server from a year ago that you were using 2110 with, you know, we actually, in software, because of what we do, the magic they do behind the scenes, and I don't know what it all is because I try to stay away from it. And, you know, we have incredible programmers and incredible guys that write stuff, but they were able to increase the density of the server that you had a year ago. So now your ROI is significant. I think we're now at, we're somewhere in the 40s. I can't remember specifically where it is, but we did, that was one of the things we did through the manipulation of drivers and operating systems and our own software. And the one thing we did, we took our delay or processing delay through the server. Now this is a completely caught server. There's no video specific hardware in it. It's, you know,
there's no GPU.
No GPU. There's no video specific card that's processing video. This is strictly memory, CPU, power, a motherboard, and a pretty metal box around it, and a big bandwidth network card that brings it all in, you know, 100 gig network card. But we actually brought the delay, the processing delay, down from 2 frames to 1. Now that competes with every SDI multiviewer on the market, as far as I can see.
So you're saying a traditional SDI multiviewer, because of all the processing, you know, the GPU's got to turn that into a visual representation to go up on the screen. It's typical to have 2 or 3 frames compared to the one frame.
1 to 2 frames in SDI, yeah.
1 to 2 frames. So I guess that's a common question. You know, if we go all IP, is that going to add the latency? You're either on par or you're better than the SDI solution. Is that what you're saying?
We're at least on par. I wouldn't say we're better, but we definitely, in I think we're the only ones in the industry that can do that, you know, and in a mixed environment. So 2110, 2110 out, or 2022-7, 2022-7 out, or 2110 out, you know, we have about a frame processing delay through the system. Plus,
that's awesome.
I believe we're the only ones on the market that can do MPEG-TS and HLS and JPEG 2000 all in that same mosaic. I don't think there is anybody else that does that today in pure software on a dongle the size of my thumb.
Yeah. Your founder there, Abe, likes to show a little, you know, it looks like the little wireless keyboard, little USB, little nub you hook to your computer. He's like, this is all you need. This is all you need. You need this little nub.
This is actually there. All right there. It's software. It's the OS. It's all your licenses. It's one of the cool things when people talk about redundancy with our solution. Let's say for some reason the server failed. The traditional way was you buy double of everything. You can do an easy switch over, which we do. We've done that as well. But I'm like, if you have a server in standby next to this one and it's on the same network, you pull this dongle out, you put it in the other server and you hit the power button, you're up and going within, 5 minutes. It's just wow. That quick.
And all the configurations travel with the dongle. You don't have to take 3 hours to restore all your settings. Everything just migrates over.
Everything migrates over very easily. And in the year that I've been here, I've only heard of one dongle having an issue out of the, I don't know how many thousands of dongles we have out in the field today. But that was easily restored by our remote tech support team. They reflashed the dongle, they got it up and going, and they were very happy. Awesome. It was a customer in Brazil, so it's very resilient. It's easily backed up. We have lots of backups, so just in case you need to restore something, I know that my demo system in the back, I let a customer borrow my dongle because they needed it for some testing that they were doing. I said that's fine. When they brought it back, obviously all my configurations were gone, everything like that.
Be careful what you lend people. So they messed up all your settings.
I know, which is totally okay. I completely expected that to happen, but because I already had my image saved, I was able to restore it within 5 minutes and have it up and running, mm-hmm. just like you mm-hmm. see here. So it's one of the easiest products that I've ever seen to support. Because there's so many backups to it, there's so much redundancy to it. There is, it's very simple when you talk about, and because it lives on a dongle for on-prem, it makes it very easy to use. And because
so you mentioned COTS hardware. So Tag and Vitovation will help the customer figure out how much processing power we need, whether if you have hundreds of IP feeds, you might need several servers, and then we deliver the video to a 4K display using either optically or IP to a little set-top box with HDMI, 4K HDMI out. Do you have some topology? Maybe show us some of the some of the COTS hardware we would need to set up a system. Do you have a slide that shows some of that stuff? We're coming up on an hour. I mean, we can keep Bill and I can keep going all day here. brevity is not usually my strong suit. But yeah, if you have a block diagram of what a system looks like.
Yeah, so this is a slide that we use a lot because one of the things that this shows two things, right? Number one, that we have all these signals coming in from the left here, and no matter what they are, they're coming into the central IP switch, and then they're going out to the MCM, which is taking them and processing them and putting them in pretty mosaics. The great thing is if you just want to you have a small operation a day, let's say you have 10 channels and you just want to throw those up on a multi-viewer and be able to probe them, that's probably going to be a single server. Even if it's, maybe 50 channels, it could be a single server. But let's say tomorrow you have a requirement that you need to add 1,000 channels or more to your system. Well, that's very simple for us. You just add a few more hardware pieces to it, you add a few more licenses, and then you're outputting to a number of different all those signals into one. With this, we support SDI over IP uncompressed in items like we see here, the Nude, the Aja, Embryonics we also work with. You can also push those out multicast through an STB. But again, because each one of these can be separate mosaics, you can also have a copy. Every one of these outputs is also an HLS copy so that you can view it on a mobile device, on your computer, somewhere else in your facility, at home. That's what makes it very flexible for what you're doing in your operations.
Very good. So someone's asking an obvious question, but I think it's a good one. You mentioned COTS hardware, but does it work in the cloud? I mean, Absolutely. We kind of alluded to that, you know, the transmission engineer working at home. I guess there could be physical servers in the master control feeding IP outs to a computer at home or in a secondary location. How would we work in the cloud?
So the great thing is that over the last 9 months that we've been heavily involved with AWS. In fact, the Super Bowl this year was all brought in back through AWS to monitor in LA. And we are pushing those mosaics out from AWS onto glass inside of a control room in Los Angeles. It's mostly compressed in AWS because there's not really a pipe big enough right now to take uncompressed. But when you start talking about that, the fact that we can live in AWS, and it's the same software. The software does not change across the board when you talk about putting it in AWS or putting it on a VM. Or putting it on-prem, it's exactly the same software across the board. So you get the same probing capabilities, you get the same multi-viewer output capabilities, and it really is depending on what your operation is, because what we have found is that 24/7 AWS usage is very expensive. And that's where we start looking at the differences between, do you want to leave everything in your cloud and monitor it all in your cloud, or do you want to bring it back on-prem and monitor it locally, which can be a little bit more cost effective than what AWS is.
You mentioned VM too. Storage resources. So this can go in a physical appliance, and usually the physical appliance, your preferred brand is Dell. Mm-hmm. Vitovation can help you with procure that hardware, the Dell hardware points. The Arista is that support that, set that all up. So on-prem in a Dell, in your virtual server, in your VM, you support that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we're in a VM environment, how do you use the dongle, or you handle the licenses a little different if it's a VM situation?
There's still typically a dongle in the machine, but it's pretty much open because you can have multiple instances of it. It's just actually pulling the licenses from the dongle at that point in time. But those licenses are completely flexible, like we talked about before. If you had licenses from your on-prem servers, but now you want to light up some from the cloud, that's very easy. You're just moving those licenses out to an AMI that's on the cloud, and you can continue to use them. Again, completely flexible, borderless use of your solution.
Okay. Someone's asking a great question, Bill. What are the costs? I know you have some published costs that I think you feel it's appropriate to share your pricing model at this point.
I can share generally what our pricing model is. I think that's something we should have a conversation with, because it does change based upon how many licenses you buy. But we've taken a big step back with zero friction and actually leveled the playing field between 2110 and compressed. So if you buy 2110 or if you buy a compressed signal, it's exactly the same price. And that price goes down the more you buy. It's kind of a great philosophy for us. We also have the ability to do recordings and de-encryption and use the ABR stack. So those are all different prices based upon the primary price as well. So it's very easy for us to design a system because the hardware has to go along with that, or the AWS instance has to go along with that. So you can have a very flexible way of working.
Okay. Yeah, actually, you know, we encourage you at the end here. We're coming up on the hour, Bill. Maybe this is a good point to kind of wind things down. Sure. Let me show you guys. So reach out to Vitovation. Let me get my screen back. Let me see. Do I have to make myself the presenter again? I think I do. Make presenter. Come on. Oh, there we go. Yeah, so you can see here, you know, Vitovation. I'm hesitant, you know, what do they say in business, you know, as we get older in age, Bill, we're not supposed to reveal our age, but you can see here I've skipped from going gray to just going white. I guess I still have my hair is a good thing. I've been doing this for the better part of 35 years. I started my career working for my dad at Multidyne. My brother now runs Multidyne, the fiber optic company. Vitovation is in its 10th year. We've done some really exciting projects with in the 10 years time, you know, with the NHL, Madison Square Garden Network, MSG Network, NFL, Viacom. You can see some of our customers here. We turnkey the whole process. You know, up front, we're doing consulting. We're helping you pick the right technology for your projects. We're going to be plugging tag technology now into a lot of our existing projects. We're certainly going to bring it into new projects that we're working on. We'll consult, we'll help you design the system, we'll help integrate the technology, and then project management, warranty, and support. So we handle the whole project from end to end. Vitovation, we love wowing our customers with excellent support, 24/7 support. For all of our customers, whether it's hockey, live PD, IPTV at Nickelodeon or Viacom or Paramount Studios, we're here to support you. Here's some of the other projects we've done. But here's our main contact information. You know, you call the main number, 949-777-5435. I think option two brings you to sales. So one of our sales engineers will help you. You have my contact information here, jimj@vitovation.com. That's my direct email. You can connect with us on social media. And you'll work with both companies, obviously. You know, Vitovation will start the process. We'll bring Bill and his team in. We'll work with the tag engineering team to make the suggested recommendations. How many servers do you need? What horsepower server do you need? You can, of course, procure the server yourself. Vitovation, we feel it's better to turnkey the whole design. Get the server, get the software, get the hardware. This way, if something doesn't work right, it's one phone call. You know, the Dell server one morning doesn't boot up, you call Vitovation because we sold it to you. We'll support it. We'll take care of it. So if you folks have any questions, I think we've answered most of them. Looks like we got all of them, Bill. We are recording the session. We will put it up online once in the next couple of days. So probably early next week, you'll see the recording up online. Bill also has a new video they're releasing about the zero friction. We could put some of that information up online and reach out to Vitovation if you have a specific need or application, and we can arrange a demo and get you a price quote. Anything I forgot to, anything else you want to add, Bill?
Oh yeah, just the one last thing. I mean, we love the try before you buy scenario. So if anybody wants to try the software in their facility, we're happy to get a dongle out so you can start trying it, or even trial on AWS.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Bill. Thanks for joining. Everyone out there, thank you for joining today. I hope you all stay safe and healthy, and look for more information online. Look for the recording online. Thank you, folks. Thanks, Bill.
Thanks so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.